There are plenty of futuristic high-tech materials used in medicine these days, from titanium alloys to hydrogels, even 3D printed tissues. But medicine's next wonder material might come from much, much more humbler origins. That material's the subject of a new video and article up on our website, sciencefriday.com. Here to talk about it are our video producer, Luke Ruskin, and a Science Friday Online managing editor, Julie Liebach. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ara.
Hi, Ara.
All right, Luke, what is that terrific new material?
Oh, worm spit.
Did you say worm spit?
Yeah, the spit of a worm. Yeah, it's pretty miraculous.
Julie, you want to help us
out? Let me help you out, yeah. Another name for that would be silk.
Silk.
Yeah, silk. So everyone's familiar with silk, right, as a textile. You've either worn it, you've slept on it, you've maybe carried it in the form of a purse or something. Well, these researchers at Tufts, Dr. David Kaplan and Dr. Fiorenzo Omeneto, are working with silk. So let's first talk about what silk is. It comes from a little caterpillar called a silkworm, which eventually turns into a moth. And the way that these caterpillars make silk is they have this organ called a silk gland, and they concoct this mixture of protein and salt and water in this little gland, and they essentially barf it up. They barf it up as a
very
fiber.
Scientific term.
That's the scientific term. They barf it up as a fiber, silk, and that's what they use to weave their cocoon. Mm-hmm. And the cocoons are actually the raw material that these researchers are using at Tufts.
I actually have one right here.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It looks like a skein of yarn, you know? Like a tiny little
It looks
size
kinda
of a big walnut. Something.
A little bigger than, it's about a walnut, a little narrower maybe. It looks like a tiny egg surrounded with boiled wool or felt or something. And if you shake it, you do hear something in there, and that's actually a little dead body, not to get all morbid on you. But, yeah, it's a desiccated pupa. So you can order these
the
cocoons.
Silkworm.
Yes. It's a silkworm in mid-metamorphosing state. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so these researchers are using these cocoons to make all sorts of devices, but they can't just use the cocoons as they are. They have to do a little something to them. So they reverse engineer them, and they're looking for this protein called fibroin. Some people might say fibroin. And they eventually reverse engineer this into an aqueous solution, a silk fibroin solution, and that is the starting material for a range of innovations.
Mm-hmm. And Luke, you went to the lab, you visited David Kaplan's lab. Explain what was going on there.
Well, David Kaplan is a tissue engineer by trade, and he uses silk to make all sorts of medical devices. There's a smorgasbord of medical devices there. So you have things such as like silk nanoparticles, Science Friday favorite, the nanoparticle. Mm-hmm. These are kind of loaded with drug delivery, and so they'll go to a target of a problem. There's silk scaffolds to hold together organs. There's silk surgical gels. There's even silk models of human brains and intestines. They're not whole intestines or whole human brains. They're just meant so that you can see the sort of environment inside the brain or inside the intestine. And the silk is kind of the scaffold, and they grow these tissues and these cells on them. And you can create all sorts of replicate the exact environment that you would have inside the brain with the different types of cells in there or inside the intestine. And you could see what the microbiome is doing in there as well.
You know, we've known that surgeons have used silk thread in surgery for years.
Sutures.
Mm-hmm. Because obviously the body doesn't care.
Yeah.
Right? You can make these devices out of this silk because the body's not going to...
That's one of its miraculous properties. So when you put silk in your body, it has a much lower immune reaction. Your body has a much lower immune reaction to the silk versus some of the other stuff you might put in your body during surgery. Or it doesn't cause inflammation. That's another good property. And it also degrades inside your body. So these researchers have been able to take silk and program it to degrade at a certain interval. So they can make really hard silk that degrades very slowly, or they can make it really soft that degrades very quickly.
I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. We're talking with video producer Luke Ruskin and our online and managing editor, Julie Liebach. Julie, your article is about a researcher who tries to merge silk and electronics.
Yeah, so that's one of the things that they're looking at, too, and that's happening largely in Dr. Omeneto's lab. So I'll give you an example that might help. So they created this device called a magnesium heater, and it consists of a very transparent silk film. It's very small, sandwiched around what to me looks like a maze that a kid might solve in an activity book, but it's really tiny. This thing would fit on your knuckle. So the maze is actually part of a wireless device. It consists of a serpentine resistor and a power receiving coil, and it's made out of magnesium, which is actually something that your body needs. So why would you want something like this? Well, imagine that you're getting a surgery, and sometimes surgical incisions come with bacterial infections, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So you can imagine sticking this little device into the incision, sewing it back up, and then using a remote control, you can trigger that magnesium to heat up, and it kills the bacteria. So they actually did this in mice, and it worked.
And it worked. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole thing dissolved inside the mouse.
And that's the point. With silk, biodegrades, they call it bioresorbable in the body, and the magnesium, the electronic component, also degrades.
Well, you know, with silk's been around so long, you're just wondering why it took so long for them to learn how to do this. You know, I guess it's just
30 years. Dr. Kaplan.
It's a lot 30 of trial
years.
And error.
It took him 30 years to do this. And I know that we had some of your silkworms that you've shot, I mean, not what a gun, the footage-wise, crawling around our office, right?
Well, I wanted to pay tribute to them, but as it turns out, they are really annoying to film. They are. They are temperamental models.
Just don't listen to commands.
Yeah, I would tell them, you know, can you just lift your head up just a little bit? Stop holding on to that. And, you know, I'm sure my office mates thought I was crazy when I'm saying, no, just stop clinging. Just stop clinging to me. And they only eat one thing. Yeah, prima donnas.
More than me, huh?
They only eat mulberry paste, which is some nasty smelling stuff. Yeah.
It's great. So where can we see the video? Is on the website now?
It's on sciencefriday.com. You can go there and watch the video, read the article. You can subscribe to the videos and check back in. Oh, and can also have an education. Educational.
So remember that little thing we shook, that cocoon? Right. So you can actually order these. And we on sciencefriday.com/silk, we also have a link to an educational activity, a cocoon dissection. So
wow, you can get your own.
Yeah, you can
dissect along right there on the website.
It's very clean. No blood.
This is very cool. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
One last thing. Just in time for camping season, there is science that may settle the argument over what's the best way to build a campfire. If you've built a campfire, you've had many debates with each other. What's the best way to do that? Well, after factoring in air density, the coefficient of volumetric thermal expansion, the volume average velocity of fluids, researchers concluded in the journal Scientific Reports that the best, hottest fire will be the one where the height of the fuel pile, the height, is about equal to the diameter of the base. Height equals the diameter of the base. So all of you who like those old teepees and log cabin shapes, you win. Now, maybe it's time to analyze proper marshmallow placement for optimal s'mores formation. We'll get into that next.